Now, I mentioned this earlier, but I wanted to have a slide and I want to mention again. Structural models and path models are often referred to as causal models. There's this weird phenomenon in behavioral sciences. People who run true experiments are really touchy, almost whiny, about the use of causal words. Because sometimes they're running a true experiment without confounds, sometimes they're not, and they really differentiate between those two. But there's a lot of people in behavioral sciences that will never run a true experiment. They will never have anything that's causally interpretable. But darn it, I want to talk about cause anyway. So I shall. And so they start using the words even though they really don't deserve the words. They shouldn't use the words. They don't have a causal design. They don't have causal data. But damn it, I want to use that important word. Data from path models are rarely from experimental designs. They're almost always from non-experimental designs. They're almost all subject variables that are measured. So causal models still only show associations among a set of variables, not their causal relationships. But remember, and this was something that most of you did really well in the lecture, or on the essay from Unit 1. Associative information is what we have built our scientific world on. We would love to have causal information whenever we can get it. We don't have very much of it. Nearly all of the information that we use is descriptive and associative. One of the problems with structural models and path models is that they really can't sort out timing for us. A path model cannot differentiate between a model that says motivation leads to study time, which leads to test scores, from a model that says, nope, not quite, almost, but not quite. Study time leads to motivation that leads to test scores. A statistical model cannot tell these two apart, which is why it's important to remember that we can use our longitudinal design, we can use our longitudinal models, and sort out which of these seems to have the stronger influence, or at least the stronger relationship to which one. A really important reason to study path analysis is to think about how do you make a path analysis better. Because the way that you make a path analysis better is the same way that you make research into any behavioral science question better. You're going to be young scientists. You're going to be competing with people who have played this game for 5, 10, 15, 30 years when you've been doing it for months. It doesn't seem fair. It's not. Here's how you cheat. You take a well-known effect, something that's been discovered, it's been replicated, and you add something to it. You decide how to improve the path analysis. Remember, you're going to do multivariate research. You're not going to look at two variables at a time. So the question is not which variables am I going to look at, it's which variables am I going to add. So what variables do we add? One thing, antecedents. What are variables that come before or cause the variables in the model? I do a lot of work trying to understand exam performance in this class and my other classes. I'm constantly modeling exam performance. Do you think that everything that happens to influence our exam scores happens in our class? Or might there be things that happened and we have data before you ever walked in the door for the first 350 lecture that might have an influence in your 350 exam scores? Make sense? No matter what you're studying, there was a before. There was an antecedent. Take those variables that other people haven't started to study yet and start studying the same phenomena earlier. If you're studying the behavior of adults, see what information you can get about them when they were adolescents or children and see if that doesn't improve your model. If you're trying to study patients, whether it's medical patients, psychiatric patients, whatever, see what you can learn about them before they became patients and see if that's part of your model. Starting earlier than other people have started is a great way as a young scientist to grab a couple more variables and contribute to a literature. Two, while I model the hell out of grades in here. It isn't really grades in here that I care about. What I really care about is what you remember from this class, what you learn and remember from this class that you can use in your next class, when you go to graduate school, when you go to work. So even though we do spend a lot of time and effort modeling grades in this class, I also spend a bunch of time and money getting information about people from after they had this class. How well they did in the 400 level classes, how well they did in jobs, how well they did in graduate school. Another quick way to add information is say, all right, what happened after what we've been studying? So people tend to take a look at what are the immediate consequences of some manipulation. That's good. Let's get those data. But then let's make sure that we can contact those people in 6 weeks, 12 weeks, 6 months later. We contact them again and get more data from them and see whether that treatment has lasted. So two quick ways to add value to programmatic research is get variables that came before the ones you've looked at so far, get variables that come after the ones you've looked at so far. Also, the middle, intermediate causes. I'll bet that when I started talking about teaching quality, lab performance, homework performance, study time and motivation, you had a whole list of variables that ran through your head that you're wondering why I didn't put them in the model. No good reason. Because I chose to study these and build a picture on these. The way that you start contributing as a young scientist is by adding to the research that people are doing. Most of us will never create a phenomena, create a topic, come up with a brand new measure that nobody's ever used before. We're going to be studying things that other people have studied. How do we compete? The way we compete is multivariate research and adding variables that other people haven't added. So let me show you a good example of this. Let's take something really simple. How about the nature-nurture paradox? What drives behavior, nature or nurture? Psychologists have been bitching about this forever. Psychologists have been complaining about this, trying to understand this from before it was psychology and they were psychologists. It's one of the deepest questions, and you don't have to find it in science. It's in poetry, it's in literature, it's in music. Start looking. We're always trying to figure out, why the hell did you do that? Because you're like that, or because something forced you into it? Let me give you a hint. Anytime you hear somebody saying, is it this or is it that? It's probably a little bit of both, and there's something else going on. That's the whole nature of programmatic research. That's the whole nature of multivariate research. We don't have to say, is it this or that? We can look to see if it's both and what else is going on. So here's that simple story. I want to see whether nature, IQ, or nurture, socioeconomic status, drives grades. Because grades, painfully, are predictive, and they matter. And grades, particularly high school grades, can often set the stage for how well someone does earning a living during their lifetime. Well, one of the ways to engage multivariate research is to use path analysis. And path analysis is all about lining things up in time. So way at the first, on the left-hand side, we've got the socioeconomic status that the child was raised in, the early IQ of the child, and most of these IQs were assessed at around 6. GPA stands for grades during the junior and senior year. And then one of the things we always want to do is add a variable or two. Spice things up a little. See what the hell else is going on. And the variable that was chosen in this analysis is achievement motivation. How motivated you are to do well in school. How are we doing? So, this is our path model. In order to get this path model, we had to do two multiple regressions. One predicting achievement motivation from SES and IQ, and a second one predicting GPA from all three. SPSS. We get these path coefficients and we plug them in. These path coefficients, again, are just the beta weights from the multiple regression model. And the nature people look at this and they say, see, I told you. Look at that IQ path coefficient. It's huge. Path coefficients have about the same small, medium, large as effect sizes. They're really just a variation of a correlation coefficient. So that IQ to GPA, holy crumps, look at that. It is monster. And look at that piece of shit regression weight from SES to GPA. Told you, it's all about nature. Nurture has nothing to do with it. And the nurture people say, have you looked at the rest of the model, dummy? Because, yeah, there's not a direct effect from SES to GPA, but look at that huge indirect effect. SES drives achievement motivation. And achievement motivation is almost as highly correlated with GPA as is IQ. Once you put it together into a path model. So it's not one or the other, it's both. But you only notice the importance of SES when you build a better model that's got the right variables in it. This is why multivariate research is so important. If all I have is the correlation between IQ and GPA and SES and GPA, I'm going to get the wrong story. Because tell me if you've heard this before. Some slightly round furry guy who stands in front of you a couple times a week. Bivariate results are very often wrong. Multivariate results are necessary to get the whole story. So clearly, at least even just with these four variables, the richer, more accurate story is that IQ has a direct effect, SES has a massive indirect effect channeled through achievement motivation. And that's a different story than say, oh, it's all IQ. This is the kind of thing that we can do with complex multivariate research that we just can't do with a bunch of correlations, ANOVAs, and t-tests.